Session number 17180.
Being the real four.
Eventually, we were told the Britannia could move. So we were parallel to a railway line. And when we attempted to cross a railway halt, Germans' tanks opened fire and also mortars rained down on this railway halt. And we had a difficult job getting across it. There were casualties, and I lost one of my sergeants, badly wounded, at that point. As we advanced along the road to Arnhem, we had covered some 2 miles with our R Company as point company, a quarter of a mile ahead of us, when they had gone past a road on their left and had not noticed that German vehicles had arrived on that road. So between their passing that road and our arriving at the road, the Germans had come up over the reverse slope and were coming down our side. Our colonel ordered us off the road, and he tried to signal to the leading company that there were German tanks coming from the side road. But he could not make contact for the simple reason that our radios proved ineffective in that road, in that country. There were so many hills and dales that signaling was poor. The Germans coped with it all right. They had more powerful radios, but we couldn't. So the colonel was out of contact with his leading company, who was only a quarter mile away. So he duly put the rest of the battalion under cover, and he sent his second in command to warn the leading company what had happened, and the Germans then spied him and opened fire and destroyed his brain gun carrier and killed him. A second officer was sent, and he, by the way, was the corporal who'd thrown the explosives that blew up the tanker in Sicily. He'd now been commissioned on my recommendation, and he was sent to liaise with our company, and his jeep was blown up, and he was killed too. Sad loss of two good officers. Well, we made no more contact with our company, and they had to fight independently as we cut across country. And eventually, our heavy equipment proved a hindrance to us, and we could only advance through secondary growth very slowly. We then arrived in close proximity to the main Oosterbeek Arnhem Road, and we had to come to a halt because it was too dark to do anything. So we remained there for some 4 hours in total darkness when daylight broke. And on that, my company then became Van Company, Point Company, and my platoon took up the rear of the company as reserve. We advanced with 7 platoon in the lead, followed by company headquarters, and I was moving with company headquarters and my batman and runner with me when we were ambushed at a place called Schmalschweg on the Arnhem-Oosterbeek Road. The Germans prepared a most excellent ambush consisting of 3 heavy machine guns, 2 rocket-propelled mortars, and a tank. And at a given signal, they all opened fire and caused awful casualties to us, some 40 casualties. My company commander said, "Bingley, take your platoon left flanking." Now, my batman and runner and sniper had all been wounded with me in the O group. But I was able to extricate my platoon, and we went and did a rear flanking attack to drive the Germans from the railway line where they were. And there was also a lone building at Schmelzweg with a straw roof. And we noticed, I noticed through my binoculars, that machine gun fire was coming from the thatched roof of this lone building. So I set my machine guns on it, firing tracer, and we were able to set fire to the thatch of the building, and we then fired high explosives at it, and we killed the gunners in there. So that was a blessing. Then we turned our fire onto a second machine gun, which we destroyed. Now, that only left me with one Solothurn to deal with, and I set two Bren guns onto the third Solothurn, and do you know, and I couldn't believe it, that third Solothurn wiped out both my Bren gun crews. We were firing, say, a few shots. With a Bren gun, you only fire a few shots, a tap, 1 5-minute tap, then you stop. Whereas the Germans were firing at a rate of 2,000 an hour, and they got all the ammunition they wanted, and they really messed up. They wiped out two Bren gun crews of mine. That was a shocking loss, quite shocking. Well, to my delight, the German tank and the rocket-propelled mortars moved off then, having done their damage, obviously to set up another ambush. And I was called back by the company commander. He said, okay, come join the company. But we, by then, had got 47 casualties out of one company. We continued moving to Arnhem until we came in the vicinity of the prison, Arnhem Prison. And when we got to Arnhem Prison, we covered the same ground that the 3rd Para Battalion had previously been on, and all their casualties were still lying on the ground. And we had got involved in a battle that we should never got involved in. Can't think how it happened, but we did. So we decided to sidetrack and to make our way straight for the Elizabeth Hospital. But by error, we strayed into the Elizabeth Hospital at open ground to the back of the hospital, and my colonel got a very rude rebuke from a senior medical colonel for allowing his troops on there. But my colonel said, well, how the hell was I to know that this was a hospital? He said, as far as I'm concerned, it's an open ground with buildings in front. I have no idea this is a hospital. He said, it is. Please get away from it, because there are a German anti-tank gun in front of it and heavy machine guns. So the colonel said, apologies, we will do that. Now, the colonel said, then turned round and said to the company commander, get your companies across the road and go to the south, and we'll reform south. It took me, because I was looking after my own platoon, 6th platoon, and also number 7 platoon, because their platoon commander had been wounded in the ambush, I now got 2 platoons to get across the road, the survivor 2 platoons, and it was an awful job. And I got them over the road by use of smoke. I would throw smoke and get about 10 men across the road, then I'd throw a second lot of smoke and get another 10, and that's how I did it. But it was getting a tricky business. And we eventually formed up in a group of houses, all round protection. While I was there, the colonel came along then with my company commander, and he said, Richard Bingley, he said, I have a call from the bridge saying we are in urgent need of ammunition. Can you get some to us? I have said, yes, I will, and I'll send them 3 Bren gun carriers. I want you to take 3 Bren gun carriers to the bridge with the ammunition and tell them that the battalion's on its way. Send me the Bren gun carriers back. I said, yes, I will, sir. I made 3 loads of ammunition that the colonel handed to me. And the first Bren gun carrier was called from cover, and we loaded it. And as we loaded it, so the German anti-tank gun fired direct at the Brinken carrier and threw us all over the place. I got thrown right up in the air and came down, crash-landed on the pavement. Damaged my knees. I was in a mess. Well, we had to unload the ammunition and put it and split it up between the other two loads for the second and third vehicle. And then when we'd done that, we then called the second vehicle. It came, we loaded the larger contingent of ammunition onto it, and I was just getting my lads ready to put on the carrier when that stopped a direct hit from the anti-tank gun, and that was written off. So the colonel said, well, damn it, he said, I can't risk my third vehicle. We'll have to march to the bridge after all. So he retained his Bren gun carrier, and we redistributed the ammunition, and we had to go by foot. When my mission was cancelled, taking the Bren gun carriers, the adjutant turned round to me and said, Bingley, he said, take a sergeant and a runner with you and search through the surrounding houses and see if you can locate some of the men that are still missing from the battalion, because we need the full battalion when we move on to Arnhem Bridge. I said, very well, sir. And I took the... Now, there was only one route I could take. And I took the sergeant and the runner with me, and I went to the far end building, which was a hotel called the Rhine Hotel. I went there, and I found 12 battalion soldiers. So I took them, gathered them up, and I took them back to the adjutant. I said, here you are, 12 soldiers. Oh, good. He said, go and take a second recce. So I did a second reconnaissance, and this time I found 14 soldiers, and I took 14 back to them. Oh, he said, splendid. Just time for you to make a third survey. And with that, I said, oh, very well, sir. And with that, the sergeant said, really, he said, if you don't mind, sir, I ought to thoroughly clean my weapon. He says, I've been firing, pooping off rounds all the time. There's been no time to clean it. I must clean it before we go and do the assault on the bridge. I said, all right. And the private said the same thing. I said, okay, I'll go on my own. Well, I'd only set forward a few paces, and I thought, you, what an absolute idiot I was. To go, and I'm going on the same route I've covered twice already, going for the third time the same route, on my own. What if I've been seen? I'm not going to have a chance. And I thought, heavens alive, keep your ears open, Bingley. I was about to climb a fence, which was four houses away from where the Rhine Hotel was, when suddenly I knew I'd made a mistake. And I knew that I was being advanced on, and I opened fire. And do you know, I put a burst into the stomach of a German SS senior NCO. But he still had the presence of mind to grapple with me, and he struck me, damaged hand. The hand that had had that bullet in Sicily, he struck that, and he destroyed my Sten gun, you know. And he grappled with me and dragged me off the hedge, and we were in a fix. So I thought, well, I'm having a job here, but I hadn't realised that I'd shot him in the stomach. And it took a couple of minutes before he suddenly relaxed and died. But he was a very brave man, and I felt awful about... I didn't feel awful about him killing him. I felt awful myself, the effort I'd used wrestling with him. And my hand by then had taken an awful mauling because it had hit the ground umpteen times as we wrestled. We wrestled furiously. And he was doing that with his bullets. So with that, I left. My Sten gun was no good, so I left it there. I couldn't use my pistol because it was still in the holster, and I couldn't unbuckle it. So I went back, and when I got back to the adjutant, he said, you look awful. I said, yes, I am, and I told him what happened. And our intelligence officer, who was a Russian, Cypri Britnov was a Russian who'd come to England in 1917 as a baby, you know. And he said, "Richard, you look awful." I said, "I am." He said, "I'll give you the very thing you need. I'll give you some brandy." Oh, I said, "I love a brandy." But it wasn't an ordinary brandy. It was a cherry brandy, the most sickly concoction you can drink. And it made me feel worse. Well, anyhow, I pulled myself together and we then carried on. And when we got, after a time, it became obvious that the only way we were going to go forward was by using groups. That was to winkle out the German machine guns that were dug in at the base of trees and with snipers that were in the treetops. They got snipers in the treetops and heavy machine guns at the base of the trees, you know. And they'd use a machine to drill a hole that would take a 40-gallon kerosene drum. And they dropped in there, put their machine guns on the ground and covered themselves with a camouflage net. So it was three teams were set up. Team A was three company commanders, the company commanders of our S&T company between them. Did the first one, and they were going to use grenades, a Bren gun, a machine carbine. They were going to wipe out the machine gun at the base of the tree and then fire into the treetops. And when they had done that, I would then take a group of two sergeants and a corporal. I had two sergeants with machine carbines, a corporal. They all were grenadier guards, these were. I was lucky, I had a lot of grenadier guards in my platoon. And so, and the drill was that one grenadier guard sergeant would throw grenades, one would fire rifle, the third would fire machine gun, and because I couldn't fire anything with my hand, I would merely control and I'd give the signals. Well, we wiped out, number one was wiped out by the three majors, we wiped out number two, the majors wiped out number three. My group wiped out number four, they did five, and I was then going to do number six. And I said to the sergeant, I said, "Got to be careful here." I said, "These fellows know what the drill is now. They've seen what's happened to the other five. Do be careful." I said, and this time, two of you throw 36 grenades at the machine gun. I said, to wipe it out. I said, but before I could give the signal for grenades to be thrown, one of my sergeants, my platoon sergeant, said, "I see him." And he stood up from cover and went to fire at a sniper in the tree, and the sniper fired first. And I saw a tracer go right through the throat of my platoon sergeant, who was in the Scots Guards. So my platoon sergeant, the Scots Guards, he was cut. But I didn't know whether he'd been killed or not, but I ought to have known. And I went over to him and to examine him. And when I realised he died, I was removing one of his identity discs so I could give it to the Red Cross later on, you know, to prove his death. And also, I was retrieving his ammunition when I got hit by a sniper in the ankle. I got shot in the ankle, in from the left side, out from the right. So with that, the colonel said, he called up, he said, "We can do no more good this way." He said, "What we've got to do now is go up the middle road and then catch these fellows from the rear." He said, "We've wiped out five positions." He said, "We're not going to do any more now." So he then said to the company command of T Company, "I want you to take your company and capture the German headquarters in the buildings on the second road." He said, "Because until you've done that, we can't get the rest of the battalion up there." So with that, the company commander said, "Yes, I will." But mistakenly, the other two company commanders mistook the instruction. And they went with him across the road, and my company commander grabbed me. He said, "Come on, Bingley, come with me." I should never have done that. And my company, when the colonel realised what happened, he said, "Stop, Major Stark, stop." But Ronnie didn't, and I never heard that order either. But he stopped my platoon from following, and the rest of the chaps, because he needed them as a battalion defence platoon. He couldn't have everyone barging off over the road. He'd got to have a defence platoon on there. Well, I mean, that was the last we saw of him, because having got up there, we were then saddled. And having T Company did capture and clear the German from this building, and they then moved over the road to the opposite side of the road. And they got heavy machine guns, and they pounded us like anything. So it was obvious that we weren't going to get out of that building, and it was a job to get out of the back of the building we were in, because snipers from the trees could fire into where we were. So it was decided that we would mouse hole from our building to the next, and that means with a pick hole, you go into the first floor and you knock a hole in the wall about the size of a dustbin, and you climb through that hole into the next house, and when you get to the end, you knock holes in it again the size of a dustbin, and you mouse hole. And you do that as far as you can. Eventually, we got to the end house, and the Germans came over the bridge. The German tanks on the fourth day came over the bridge when they realized that our soldiers had run out of anti-tank ammunition and heavy equipment, and they had no difficulty in coming over the bridge then, and they, you know, they captured the 2nd Battalion, and then they came mopping up, and eventually they set fire to the houses that we were defending, and used flamethrowers on them, and also drove their tanks into them. I woke up finding that I'd been a prisoner for 5 hours and was lying in a builder's yard. And the next thing was that I finished up in a cattle truck and was on the way to a Jew leg at Hadamar. And then from a Jew leg at Hadamar, I went to an off-leg, Brunswick 79, officers' prison camp, and there I languished.
How were you treated as a prisoner?
I don't think I can complain, really.
And any incidents that happened to you as a PRW that you can describe?
Yes. When I had woken up and discovered that I'd been a prisoner 5 hours, I recognised one of the corporals, you see, and I said to the corporal, how long you been here? He said, 5 hours. I said, had any medical treatment? He said, no. Have you had any hot drink? No. Or I said, find a German NCO or sergeant and ask him to come and see me. And they duly found a sergeant that I had captured when we crossed the railway line. I'd captured him with his Bofa gun and taken him prisoner, but I'd released him after a time because he was a hindrance to me, you see, and the military police never came and took him from me because they'd lost their vehicles. Their vehicles had been destroyed in the gliders that they travelled in. So the military police never followed us up to take prisoners from us. So I'd released this man with his gun crew. And I said to him that I would like to see a German officer. And the German officer came, and I asked him for first medical kit and a hot drink, you know. And eventually, he sent an orderly with paper bandages. That's all they could give us, paper bandages. Now, our lads had used their first aid dressings, which they had on their first wounds, but they needed paper bandages for their other injuries, you know. When the coffee came, the Germans contaminated it by urinating in the coffee, you know. So when I heard the Germans urinating the coffee, I wouldn't allow the boys to drink it. And I was carried down there and kicked the coffee over, you know. Kicked the coffee over into the sand.
How did you know they'd urinated in
it? The soldiers saw them doing it. My soldiers watched them urinated in it. And they told me, you see, so I then had the container kicked over, you know, and I asked to see the officer again, and I explained that what had happened, the Germans were urinating the coffee. I'd be grateful if the container could be sterilized and fresh coffee brought, you see. And he apologized and said he would do that. When the second lot of coffee came, the soldier said, there are different Germans bringing at this time. There are four SS Germans with Schmeisers, and they're coming the coffee. I said, look, take me down to the point where they are. And I said, this doesn't look very good. So I said, somebody give me a mess tin, you know. So they gave me, Judy gave me a mess tin. And when they came, the Germans, in full view of us, urinating the coffee again. Second time, but a different group of Germans. So I went with there and I said, coffee please, and they third filled it. I said, oh, fill the coffee, fill it up, I want to share it. But I didn't tell them who I was going to share it with. And I said, I told them what they were then, filthy so-and-sos, and I threw it into their faces. I was accused of throwing the coffee on their uniforms and insulting the German uniforms. And I got arrested for insulting the Germans. And when I arrived at the Jura Hadamar, Colonel David Sterling, have you ever heard of Colonel David Sterling,
Certainly.
Who commanded the Long Range Desert Group?
Certainly.
Well, Colonel David Sterling, when he was captured, you know, he was senior British officer at the Jura Hadamar. And he and I had done our parachute, we'd done our SS training together up in North Scotland. And we had both been trained at the same time by the Lovett Scouts. But when I then went to number two para commando, he did not. He went to North Africa because he was a Lieutenant Scots Guards, and he formed the Long Range Desert Group in the desert. Well, when I lay, after we arrived at the Jura Hadamar, we were sprayed with the DDT powder. Then we had a hot shower, and then our uniforms were baked by Russian prisoners in ovens, and when they returned to us, I was then sent for by the CO, and when I got there, I found the Lieutenant Scots Guards, now a colonel, and he saw ex-Sergeant Bingley of the Middlesex, now a lieutenant in the parachute regiment, and he congratulated me on my commission, and I congratulated him on his being a colonel. And he said to me, I've got some bad news for you. I said, oh, please fire away. He said, you've got 10 days punishment at a correction centre. You see?
What was that?
So I said, oh, I said, is that so? Oh, yes, he said, for insulting a German uniform, you threw coffee on the uniform of German soldiers. I said, that's quite right. I said, but I thought they would take more drastic action than that. I know, he said, you've got 10 days solitary confinement, bread and water. He said, and you'll find it mightily boring too. So he said, I'll give you a book to take with you to read.